Welcome to the Her Story Speaks podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Miller. Today, my guest is Rhonda Bear. Rhonda is a remarkable woman with a story that has the hands of Jesus written all over it. Rhonda spent years of her life running from the police and finally ended up in prison. With her three children taken from her and behind bars, Rhonda finally hit a low point and surrendered her life to Christ. Her life was transformed, and today Rhonda empowers other female inmates to turn their lives around to live healthy lives with Christ as the center. Just a heads up, today's podcast is longer than others, but I promise it's worth the time to listen. Rhonda's story will leave you full of hope in the Lord's ability to use all things for His glory. Okay, well, Rhonda, welcome to the Her Story Speaks podcast. I'm super excited to have you join me today. Like I said, when we were just talking a little bit ago, I don't, quote, know you well. We haven't met face-to-face, but I've heard a lot about you, just one through Melody, also from visiting She Brews and just seeing a little bit of what you do. So welcome.
Thank you.
So like I said, I don't know your whole story, so I'm excited to hear it and just excited more so just to hear how God has worked to bring you where you are today. Because today when I was just doing a little research on you, I looked at your Facebook page and it says your description was founder and director of His House, and then you have / ex-con. So when I saw that, I thought, goodness gracious, this girl's going to have a good story to tell. So do you want to start at the beginning with us of your story and
okay,
how it started?
I can do that. Well, so I grew up in South Louisiana, and I love everything about Louisiana. I love the climate. I love the food. I love the people. I love everything about it. And so it was really shocking one day to learn that my parents were getting a divorce, and we were leaving. My sisters and I and my mom were leaving Louisiana.
How old were you when you got
that? I was 9 years old.
Okay.
And it came in a traumatic way. My dad was actually having an affair with our babysitter, and, you know, it was just a very volatile opening up of what happened. I mean, it was a very traumatic evening, that evening when we learned. And the following morning, we didn't even have a chance to process. My mom just loaded us up and moved us to Texas.
Oh, wow.
And so it became that was an adjustment in itself. Now it's time to go to a new school, and our whole life changed overnight. Because prior to that, I'd been a majorette. I marched in the parades. I was the majorette mascot for our football team. I was a straight A student. My life seemed to be going down a really good path, and all of a sudden, I've got this sharp curve in it. 6 months later, I have a new stepdad, and now I have another curve.
Oh, goodness. So just 6 months after that divorce. Okay.
Yes. So life is moving at a fast pace. And I was angry. I didn't want a new stepdad. I didn't want to live in Texas. I quickly was not liking my life. And with my stepdad, we moved to Dallas, which I do like Dallas, Texas. It's one of my favorite cities. But now I was no longer allowed to be a majorette. I was told I was going to play this game called soccer. All right, so now my other love is gone, and I'm thrown into the sport that I hate.
So you're losing all control.
Yeah, absolutely. I was losing all control of everything. I hated the sport called soccer. I was not able to confront. Not a confronting bone in my body. I did not want to get hurt, and I did not want to hurt anybody. And did not enjoy the sport at all, but I was thrown into a really great soccer team.
Okay.
And my neighbors across the street, we became best friends. Their dad and mom was our coach, and they were great. And so, of course, because they were so good and our team was so good, we won 1 year state championship playoff. And I was extremely nervous. I'd already began experimenting with marijuana, not that I liked it, but it was present. It just seemed like the thing to do.
Right. And how old are you at this time? Like 12, 13, mm-hmm. somewhere in that? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Between 12 and 13. Okay. And so at the soccer game, of course, I'm nervous, sick at my stomach. I'm got the, you know, I don't want to play in the game because I don't want to mess up. It's a horrible evening. And this soccer coach innocently said, take this little pill, it'll make you feel better. I'd never been offered a pill. I'd never taken anything like that. But I took it. And it made me feel like I was Superwoman.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. From your coach.
Yes. Wow. And I played the best game. I scored 3 scores. I was unstoppable. And in my mind, I thought, I'm never going to lose this feeling again.
Wow. You are hooked right there.
Mm-hmm. And I was hooked on the confidence. And I felt like my world just came back into control.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. But what am I going to do? How am I going to get those pills now? Well,
had you told your parents that he had given you something or no? Okay.
No, I didn't tell anybody.
Okay.
But what I decided is I would start spending the night at their house.
Oh, my goodness.
Because it's my best friend's mom. And I could sneak into the bathroom in the medicine cabinet. Mm. And I can get these pills. And I'll be real careful and nobody will know.
Wow.
So that's how that started. Sometimes it was hard to get the pills because, you know, they would run out and I would just have to wait around. My mom and my stepdad fought all the time because my stepdad was a violent alcoholic.
Mm.
And
so you had a lot of pain you were numbing. It wasn't just, oh, I was nervous to play soccer. You had a lot of pain that you were numbing with those pills then. Okay.
Yes. Okay. That's why it felt so good.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so then pretty soon my mom and my stepdad decide to divorce and decided my mom's going to move us. And she found a note in my jeans during the laundry and found out that I'd been smoking weed and taking pills. But I lied my way out of it. I was like, oh, Mom, I was just saying that. There's no truth in that. I was just trying to be cool before my friends.
Wow.
And she's like, well, I don't want you doing drugs. Okay, I won't. And but then my report card came out. And I'd gone from a straight A student to straight Fs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I had on my report card. And again, I lied and said, oh, it's just stress, you know, with us, all the fighting in the house and us having to move. I'm just not doing well in school. So she said, well, we'll get moved and you'll do better in school. Okay, I will. So we moved to East Texas to Longview and into some apartments. And I immediately hooked up with the all the people who did drugs. And then I began to idolize people who even did worse drugs than I was doing, like shooting up. I began to think, I want to be just like you.
Wow.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And so I really became on a quest, really, to become a hardcore drug addict.
Wow, and that's something you don't often hear. I mean, usually it's like, you know it's bad, or I'm trying to hide it, but that was what was ingrained in you, that that's what I want to do.
I want to be. That's what I want to be when I grow up.
What do you think? Did that seem like a way out to you, or just like that seemed like a better life, or why do you think that?
I think I had, I was thinking about this today, really, you know, I think I'd idolized my dad. And my dad's friends were hitmen for the mob. My dad was, you know, he was cool and kind of like a playboy. He hated drugs, but I I idolized the lifestyle.
Yeah, the riskiness probably. You probably glamorized it a little.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. I glamorized it.
Yeah.
And I was really angry too, so I really wanted to hurt my parents, like they had hurt me in the divorce.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get even there. And
that was probably your way that you found to have a little control over your life. And they couldn't tell you. They couldn't tell you not to do that, or you could hide it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Was Jesus in your life at all then? Had that been something in your home or something you had been exposed to the Lord?
I had been exposed to Jesus because Vacation Bible School seemed to be one of my hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
And this is so funny. Even in my addiction and soccer time, I would win the awards for getting the most people to Vacation Bible School.
Wow.
Yes.
The irony of that.
I know. I would win all the prizes.
But God was giving you a glimpse of, look, I've got bigger plans for
yes.
you, girl.
Yes. And I thought I was saved. I mean, I never thought twice about it. Like,
yeah.
am I saved? I guess I am, sure.
Yeah.
But as my drug addiction escalated, and probably about 15 or 16 in there, I purposely tried to overdose.
You did. Okay.
And die, because I was just tired of it already.
Yeah.
I was shooting up. I was taking pills every day. Already doing some teenage prostitution for drugs.
Wow. Did your mom know at that point, or is she so busy working and being a single mom? What is she?
Well, by then, we've used Tough Love.
Okay.
And if I'm going to do drugs, I'm not going to be in her home.
Okay.
She wanted me in her home, but she was trying to use Tough Love.
Yeah. So at 15, 16, mm-hmm. she has you out of the house then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. And so... But again, to do revenge, I decided that I was going to overdose and I was going to go to her house to do it.
Mm.
And I was going to let her find me dead.
Wow.
And really, I was taking my anger out on her, but my dad was the one who had caused everything.
Mm.
But I just wasn't taking my anger out on him. I was just hurting
was
the one that was closest.
That you're, yeah. Did you have any relationship or contact with him at this point, or no? When you...
Not enough.
Okay.
Not very much. Maybe
okay.
once a year we saw him.
Okay. Okay.
He was really pretty much out of our life.
Okay. But your mom was the one there that mm-hmm. you could direct your anger
mm-hmm.
at. Yeah.
Yes.
Often moms, we get a little bit more of that
yes.
anger, I think. So.
Exactly. So that's what I was doing to her. And so I went to her house with the intention of dying. And I took a lot of pills that night. And I laid down and I thought, this is it. I'm not going to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And I got scared. And I went in and told her, hey, I probably need to go to the hospital because I've taken a lot of pills. And, of course, her first response was she was so angry. Like, how dare you do this? And so I went to the hospital, and they pumped my stomach and did everything they had to do. They saved my life and put me on the mental ward for suicide. But while I was there, this guy came to my room, and his name, I will say it because I love him to pieces, Mike Deese. He was a youth pastor, and he came to my room, and he was extremely good-looking. And he comes and knocks on the door, and... I said, come in. And, you know, in fact, I said, anything that looks as good as you can come in my room. That was my response to him. And he said, well, thank you, but I came to tell you about Jesus Christ. I was like, Jesus Christ? He said, yes, you need Jesus Christ in your life. And I came to tell you that.
Oh, that's funny.
And I ended up accepting Jesus as my Savior.
That day?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And I felt a radical change.
Wow.
I felt peace come over me, and I didn't want to do drugs anymore. I just wanted to serve Jesus.
Mm, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And God used that, you trying to kill yourself to get
yes.
to,
yes, he
to
did.
Plan that man was going to be there and the one that brought you to Jesus. Wow.
He did. And this guy says, I want you to be part of the youth group. I'm like, part of the youth group? Do you know what kind of life I've lived? Mm-hmm. And I began to tell him, and he's like, that's okay. You'll fit in.
Yeah, love. And you have never met him before this.
I'd never met him before.
Oh, my goodness.
And I really didn't fit in, but he made me feel like mm-hmm. I did. Mm-hmm. I remember one day showing up for church, and I had a friend who was a stripper, and she had given me a bunch of clothes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And boots and shoes. So I showed up to church looking really good, I thought.
Sure you did.
And he said, he was just so sweet. He's like, where'd you get those boots?
Oh.
You know, he didn't say anything about the outfit.
Uh-huh.
And, but he would tell some of the women in the church to mentor me a little bit on my dressing, you know. And
but still, he showed that love for you. I mean,
yes,
that is, wow.
He did. He mm-hmm. loved me. And, oh my goodness, this man loved me. And so he wanted me to memorize scripture. And every week I would memorize scripture because he loved me and I wanted to prove to him I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really one of the greatest gifts that anyone has ever given me was to have me memorize scripture at a time when my mind was good. I know the word, and it's because he led me to a place that the word of God would be planted in my heart.
Yeah.
And so my mom, she had a new boyfriend, but he was nice, and they had talked, and they said I could move home and I could, you know, work on getting my GED, and I could work and I could live there and get my life together. And so I did. I moved in and was just living this normal life. I'm free of drugs.
So
I'm
you doing weren't good. Doing drugs anymore.
Mm-mm, I wow. could totally quit.
So after that hospital stay and you accepted Christ, you quit the drugs.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yes. And got my family going to church with me. And one day the pastor even said from the pulpit, he said, this girl looks like a light bulb in here. Mm-hmm. I want her to come up here because I glowed oh. with the Lord so much. I didn't understand that now, but or then, but now I understand what he was saying. And my life was drastically changed. I was working. Life is good. And then one day I came home, and my mom and my mom's boyfriend, they decided they were going on vacation. But they didn't know where they were going, and they didn't know when they would be back. But they had loaded up the house, and they were driving off in a station wagon.
Oh,
and me and my sisters were being left behind. Mm. And I was so angry again.
Mm.
Like, how dare you do this?
And were
this
you the oldest sister?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So my middle sister, she had met this guy, and he was a really nice guy, and he said, she can live with me. I'll take care of her while you're gone. And then my youngest sister was left with some neighbors. And I was pretty much used to being on my own anyway, so I was just
so they were just flat out abandoning you. We're done. They weren't going on vacation. They were just leaving.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, my mom ended up always regretting that, but it's true. That's what happened.
I mean, that's part of your story, and God used that too, I'm sure.
Yes, he did. And so the church said to me, well, we'll get a different family that you can stay with a different family every Sunday. So every Sunday, I'm going to pack up and go to a new family's house till they figured out what to do with me. I did that for a little while, but then one day I was just like, you know what? I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not going to another person's house. I'm not learning their meal schedule. I'm not learning anything they're doing. I'm leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd gotten a car. I didn't have my license yet, but I still had a car. And so my sister was staying with the neighbors, but she didn't want to stay there. So I went and got her, and I took her to some relatives. And then she's like, I don't want to stay here with these relatives. I want you to come get me. And I remember feeling so hopeless, like, what am I going to do? I have this little girl that's 9 years old. I have me. And I have nowhere to take you. I can't take care of you. And I just remember just doing these vicious donuts in a field thinking, I just want again, just going to kill myself, and I'm going to kill you with me, and we're not going to have to worry about where to stay.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to roll the car over or something, but I couldn't even make that happen.
Where do you feel like What happened with your relationship with Christ at that time? Did you feel betrayed, or like maybe you weren't what I thought I was, or was it just like I'm focusing on survival and God's on the back burner?
That's all I thought about was how God didn't even enter my mind.
Yeah.
Like, where are you? I didn't think, where are you, or how is this happening? I didn't think anything except, here I am again, abandoned, with no place to go and nothing to do, and now I've got a little girl who wants me to take care of her. I was so angry about it.
Yeah.
And all I needed to do was go back to the streets. I can prostitute, and I can sell drugs, and I can make enough money to take care of us. But I said, you're going to have to go stay with your aunt until I can figure this out. And she was crying. She did not want to leave.
I cannot even imagine.
And so I went to a party, and I met this girl, and she said, well, you should just come with me to Louisiana, and I can get you connected, and you can make money. I was like, okay, I just need to go back to Louisiana, because I love Louisiana anyway. I'm going to get on my feet, and I'm going to get my little sister with me. And I kept telling my little sister that every day. I'm just going to get on my feet. I'm going to come get you. And she kept waiting, but somewhere in there, I don't know how long my mom was gone. I don't know if it was just a month or two, or I really don't know how long my mom was gone, because I never went back. So I went to, it had to be a couple of years. I don't know. I just don't know. That time
That's
period
okay.
just kind of is a flat. I don't remember. So anyway, I go with this girl and try to start a life in Louisiana. And she says to me, we're going to go to this party, and it's with important people in the state of Louisiana. And we're going to go and prostitute this party.
And that wasn't shocking to you, because you had done that, and that's okay.
I thought it should pay good money.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Because I need to get my little sister with me.
Right.
And so we went, and we met this person, and he was really, really nice to us. And he said, first thing you got to do is you got to go shopping and get new clothes, because you're not dressed to work the crowd that I've got friends with.
Okay.
So we went shopping and got new clothes, and then we met up for dinner, and I mean, we were wine and dined to the max. And
you're
then
still a teenager, right?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, and then of course there's the Valiums and the cocaine that comes out.
So that
here's my lifeline.
So that re-entered your life, yes.
And I was so happy. Yes. And so my friend was with me, and I could do a whole lot of Valiums, because I had a whole lot of tolerance to Valiums, but she couldn't.
Okay.
So she fell asleep, and I never saw her again after that.
Never even ever saw her. Oh, wow.
No.
Oh, my goodness.
I remember her name was Debbie, but I can't remember what her last name was. I don't even know. Can remember even how to find her. But my friend said, I put her on a bus, and she's gone to her mom's, and you're not to try to find her. And you're going to do what I tell you to do, and I'm going to take care of you. But if you ever try to run away from me, I'm going to hurt you.
Wow, so you're, like, caught up in, like, sex trafficking, really. I mean, that's...
It wasn't called that then.
Okay, but by today's standards, I mean, you couldn't leave. That was... Oh, goodness. Okay.
So, so I ended up in this lifestyle with the... Dixie Mafia out of Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Abbeville, Youngsville, down South Louisiana. Okay. But my friend was very nice. I mean, I knew the rules.
If you follow the rules, she's probably very nice to you. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So I have the rules to follow, and I'll just follow them, because at least I have someone to take care of me, and I have plenty of drugs. So... So my job, actually, then I ended up getting a job. My job was to live on LSU campus and recruit girls who wanted to work for the organization.
Wow.
So I had a two-bedroom apartment, and I got in a little red sports car, and my sister actually ended up coming to live with my dad, so now she's in Baton Rouge, I'm in Baton Rouge, and I can go get her. And I was happy about that. And I thought I was living a good life.
That's what I was going to ask you. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like, okay, I've got things, I've got mm-hmm. a car, my life is not that bad? You
yep,
really did
feel
like that.
My life is not that bad.
Okay.
The toughest part is because I was told not to leave Tigerland, but I would go across Baton Rouge to get her. And my little sports car was a standard, and I wasn't very good at driving standards. And, I would always be afraid of getting caught mm-hmm. picking her up because there were times I got caught on a hill. One time I had to have a police officer block traffic to let me back down the hill to be able to go because I couldn't get this standard car to go on the hill. And I was so afraid of getting caught,
uh-huh, uh-huh.
being disobedient.
And disobedient to the rules of the
To the rules,
yeah, yeah.
yes, yes. And so, but the funny thing in that is every day I called my youth pastor to check in.
Really?
Yes, I wouldn't let go of him. And every day he would tell me, I want you to memorize scripture. I want you to memorize scripture.
Wow.
No matter what I was doing, I want you to memorize scripture. And then,
did he know what you were doing? Mm-hmm. The life he did.
He did. He wanted me to leave, but I just said, I can't leave. I can't leave. And he didn't have any options. Where are you going to go?
Right. But he still kept, I love that, because he still kept loving on you through that.
He did.
And that is such a reminder for us as Christians. The judging, the condemning, that is not what brings people close to Christ.
He would not let go of me. Mm-hmm. He was my lifeline to God. Because at that time, I didn't know how to have a relationship with God by myself. I guess I felt like I needed him.
Yeah.
So, but then here's God. God comes on the scene in a big way.
Okay.
Because, here I am, a really bad addict, and yet behind Tigerland was another set of apartments, and in that apartment lived Jimmy Swaggart, a TV preacher's cameraman, and his wife. And this lady likes me from a distance, so she wants to be my friend. Yes, and so she's walking her baby through the neighborhood and everything, and she sees me, and she begins to pray for me from a distance.
Wow.
Yes, and bake cookies and all kinds
of stuff.
She
never met you.
Yeah, she had never met me.
I'm sure I felt the Holy Spirit telling her, like, this woman, something about her.
Yeah. Yes, and so she wanted to be friends, and so she would approach me. I've baked you something. I've done something for you. Why don't you come over to my house, and come over. And so when I went over to their house, I didn't know who Jimmy Swaggart was. Well, she said, I want you to listen to some music. Okay. And so she had all these CDs, at the time it was cassette tapes.
Okay, yeah.
Yes. So she had cassette tapes. She wanted me to listen to this music. I loved it. So I took the music to my friend and said, I want you to listen to this new music. This is my new friend. And he's like, we will not listen to this music. We are Catholic. And prostitution is the oldest profession in the Bible. And we will go to the priest and we'll confess our sins. And you don't go back to those people. They are different and they are not right. And you need to stay away from them. So I told him I said, I have to tell you what my friend says. I can't come around you anymore. But she was not going to take that as an answer.
She wasn't. She was on a mission from God.
She was. She's very persistent. And so, but I told her, you have to be careful because I don't want you to get hurt.
Yeah.
You see? You have
so
to
you,
be very
did you
careful.
Start sharing with her, like...
A little bit, but not a whole lot.
Okay.
Because I really didn't want her to know yet.
Yeah.
And, but she already knew. God had already told her something.
Mm-hmm.
So one night, I'm down in LSU campus area, in an area called Chime Street, and I'm at a bar, and I'm really wasted. And I come out of a door, and there's a man that's standing there, and he says to me, God has sent me to tell you that you're going to die if you don't get out of what you're in.
Oh
yes.
My goodness.
And I told my friends about it, and they were like, you're hallucinating. No, I wasn't hallucinating.
Yeah, I mean, you can see why they think that, but knowing believers as we are, it's like, no.
No, that was God. He was there. Mm-hmm. And I knew this guy. I had met this guy before in Longview, Texas. He lived in like a commune. Okay. There was a place where some land was, and there was a bunch of people that lived in buses and stuff.
Okay.
But they all loved Jesus.
Okay.
I had visited them before, but only because I was very intrigued in their lifestyle. Uh-huh. But I only visited them once.
So you had never seen him there.
I'd seen him there.
That was Texas, and now Louisiana. He's down here meeting you.
And he says he was there because God sent him with this message. And he said he didn't even know who he was looking for until he ran into me. And then he said, "You're the one.
Whoa.
I'm here to tell you."
Whoa.
Yes.
Rhonda. Okay.
Yes. So then I call Mike and I say, "This guy Tony," I knew his name. His name was Tony. Mm-hmm. I said, "Tony has come with a message." And Mike's like, "Well, what are you going to do with it?" I'm like, I don't know. And so I told my friends that were with Jimmy Swagger. And they said, "Well, this is what you're going to do. You're fixing to leave right now." I'm like, "I can't leave." And they said, "Oh, no, you're leaving right now."
I'm sure that was terrifying to you. You finally had a little bit of safety, quote, acceptance, all of that. So to leave that, I'm sure was terrifying.
Yes, yes. What's going to happen? They said, "You're going to go home and get some clothes, and you're going to leave." So I went home, and I got some clothes, and I got a little lamp, because I'd been given a lamp with a little girl on it, and I love this lamp. And I went back to them, and they said, "Okay, you're leaving, and you're not to tell anyone where you're going." Mm-hmm. And so they had found a teen challenge in Pascagoula, Mississippi.
Okay.
And so they took me there. And but when I disappeared, people got really nervous and really mad. And I heard that the Jimmy Swaggart Ministries was getting a lot of bomb threats and everything else, but they would not tell anybody where I was. And so I stayed there probably for about 6 months before I told my dad or anybody where I was. They wanted me to just make sure I was safe. And I loved Teen Challenge. It was a phenomenal program. It felt crazy sometimes because there's people there going through life changes. And, but I loved it.
Was it like a camp? Is that what it is? I don't know what it is. Or is it?
Well, Teen Challenge is a program that was started by Dave Wilkerson, and they made a movie called The Cross and the Switchblade.
Okay.
And he started it in New York a long time ago when the New York gangs were really bad, and he encountered a man named Nicky Cruz, and they ended up, they started this program called Teen Challenge, and it's kind of like a house. I lived in a house. It's through the Assemblies of God, and very strict. You know, no TV, only Christian music. It was kind of like a new brainwashing, not a brainwashing in a negative way, but a way to wash your brain from everything that you've encountered to this point in life with Jesus.
Okay.
You know, we had to read the Bible and...
So it was all the worldly stuff, trying to shut that out and put new stuff in your mind.
Yes.
Was it for teens from hard places, or is it... Okay.
But they took more than teens. They took all people, like all women, from hard places.
Okay, so it wasn't a teen camp. It was more like if you have a lot of struggles and life stuff, you came there. Okay, and how long was that program then?
12 months.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you had 12 months of being inundated with truths and scriptures and all of that. Okay.
Yes, so that... At that point, Mike pretty much kind of let go of me.
Okay.
Like, "You're right where you need to be."
Okay.
"And I'm going to move on with my life."
Okay.
And I was in a great place, and life was really good. And then I'm 12 months there, and it's about time for me to graduate. And I get involved in a really unhealthy relationship.
The devil is just always there knocking at our door, waiting to get back at us, isn't he?
Yes. And I mean, I was just making a mess of my life in this relationship. Mm-hmm. So one day I called my mom. She's in Oklahoma. And I just said, "I just want to get on a bus and come to Oklahoma. I just want to leave Mississippi." And so I did. She bought me a bus ticket. I got on a bus. I came to Oklahoma. And again, I moved in with my mom. And now,
so you left that guy behind, though. Mm-hmm, okay. So mm-hmm. you were able to get out of that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And just moved in with my mom and my stepdad, who had been my mom's boyfriend, but now they're married.
Okay. And is this the one that she left with mm-hmm. all those years ago? Okay. Yes. They're married now in Oklahoma.
Yes. So I moved in with them, and I knew in my spirit I was called to be a minister's wife. And that God was going to do some good things, because I learned that in Teen Challenge. And so pretty soon I meet this another guy, and he's a preacher's son. And I think, okay, you're going to be my husband, and you might be crazy now, but you're going to turn into a preacher, and we're going to live this white life of testimony and everything okay. like that. That was my plan.
Okay. So he was the preacher's son, but wasn't living, I mean... He wasn't living like he was a preacher.
Right. He okay. wasn't yet.
Okay.
But I had plans for us.
Okay.
And I knew that he did a little bit of drugs, a little bit of marijuana, a little bit of...
So you had a few little red flags, yes. but God's bigger.
Yes, okay. God is bigger. That's He's right. going to be a preacher one day, and I'm going to be the preacher's wife. And so before you know it, we have this conversation about my past. His family says, son, run. Uh-huh. You do not want to marry anyone like her. But he said, no, I want to marry this girl. And he says to me, too, even though I do a little bit of drugs, we'll do a little bit of drugs together. And I promise I won't let your drug addiction get out of control.
Oh, goodness.
Yes.
And that didn't strike you as a big, like, get out of here. No.
No, I thought that sounds good. Just okay. don't let my drug addiction okay. get out of control.
Yeah. That sounds like a bargain with the devil I can handle. Like, we can just do a little bit.
Okay. Yes. I really believed it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we were married for 7 years. The first 7 years of hell. And we had three children. Mm-hmm. And I put him, my children, his family, my family, I put everybody through hell with my drug addiction. And then I managed to get myself clean, and I got off because I'd gotten on the needle again. I mean, everything was a mess. I get myself clean. Him and I get back together. We're together for another 7 years.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And
so were you married to him for 14 mm-hmm. years? Oh,
yes.
Wow. So a little bit of drugs didn't happen, obviously. It went to a full-blown addiction again.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And so I end up with, long story short, I end up out of that addiction, a 10-year prison sentence.
You did. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so the prison sentence was for the drugs. Is that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Because, I mean, you're so not alone in that. I mean, whatever it is that we are addiction, we think we can handle it a mm-hmm. little bit. A little bit of drinking, a little bit mm-hmm. of drugs, a little bit of shopping, whatever. Those things that we think we can get control of. And the truth is we can't. We have to mm-hmm. surrender them to God. I mean, and so your story is such an example of that. So you went in thinking, okay, just a little bit. Mm-hmm. We can keep it in control. He's going to be a pastor. But it ended with full-blown addiction and a prison sentence.
Yes.
So how did you, if you don't mind sharing, like, how did you get caught? How did it get to the point of, like, okay, you are arrested and you're in prison?
Okay, so what happened, how I got caught was, all right, so my kids has died. He's going to take my children from me, and he's not going to let me see them. Mm. And in my heart, every day, I feel like I didn't choose a man over you. I didn't choose a woman over you, but I chose drugs over you. And I knew that feeling. Mm-hmm. And I could not live with myself. Well, what I had learned living the criminal life that I live is, when you want the law to do something, you just make enough money and you bribe them. Mm-hmm. You want laws changed? You bribe legislature. You want things done in the system? You bribe the judge and the district attorney. That's what I was taught. That's what I really believed.
Right.
So my answer in all of this was, I'll get the drug deal to go down, like, because I'm back full-blown drug dealing, drug using. I'm going to get a drug deal to go down, and my whole goal is I'm going to bribe the judge and the DA. I'm going to get my kids, and I'm going to run with them.
Okay.
I don't know where I'm running. I never thought it through. But
your life
has
kind of been on the run a little bit, so that was probably just part of the behavior and what you did.
Just going to do this, but okay. Every drug deal, I kept getting arrested. Mm-hmm. And I turned my back on God completely, and meth was my God. And the only way I was going to fix everything was meth. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sell enough meth. I'm going to bribe the judge. I'm getting my kids. And I'm leaving. I'm probably going to Longview where Mike Deese is, because Mike Deese is going to coach me about how to get my life back on track.
Okay.
I had talked to him a little bit through the way, but he was pretty frustrated with me.
Come on now, Rhonda.
Yes.
Enough already.
Yes, yes, but, exactly. And, but it didn't, it wouldn't, just wouldn't happen. And so one day, the last arrest, I was taken to jail, and I had already been arrested 6 times. I shouldn't have even been out on bond.
Goodness.
But in the meantime of them trying to figure out everything, I got a bondsman to get me out right then. And so I could run. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I knew I had to run out the doors because they were not going to bond me again.
Yeah.
I had too many people looking for me already. Bondsman, I wasn't paying. I wasn't showing up for court. And people are really chasing me bad. And I get out. And what do? I meet a young girl that's having problems just like I am. And I say, come on, I'm going to help you. I'm going to take you under my wing. It's November. I've got some money on me because I did have a little bit of drug money. I'm going to take you shopping. I'm going to get Christmas for your children. And I'm going to get Christmas for my children. And we're going to get that put up and out of the way. Then we're going to go to the casino in Siloam Springs. We've got drugs, we've got money, and we've got Christmas presents for our children.
What else do you need? We've
exactly.
got a plan.
We got a plan.
Yes.
But during the time, she was calling the bounty hunters on me behind my back.
Oh, Rhonda.
I didn't know it. So they're watching everything that's going on. And I realized it when I see a police officer look at me twice. I thought, okay, something's going down. I have to run. So I beat them out the door. And I ran. And it's Thanksgiving Eve. It's warm outside in Arkansas. I'm running into this field, but there's nowhere to run except this huge brush pile. So I dive into this brush pile and I crawl to the very bottom of it on a creek. And I'm just going to lay there until the law leave. Well, pretty soon it starts raining, and it starts raining really hard. And I'm thinking, yes, because now the dogs are going to lose my scent because they got the dogs out. They got everything out. So it's raining really hard, and then the rain turns to sleet. And it is sleeting so hard that they finally have to call off the search. And the helicopter, nothing could be out there because the sleet was so hard. And I lay in this water, and I'm almost freezing to death. But I keep breathing into my shirt, trying to keep myself warm as I can. Finally, when I know it's safe, I crawl out of the brush pile and I try to walk across the field, but my legs won't carry me. I've laid in the cold so long that my legs will not work. So I crawl across this field and I'm wet and I'm muddy and I've got like ice on me, and there's this guy in this black trench coat standing behind a bar. And I say to him, I have some money. Can you get me a hotel room? And but you gotta hide me because I'm hiding from my boyfriend. And he said, okay, I'll help you. He said, we've got to get you in a hot tub of water because we got to get your body temperature up. You're going into shock.
Wow.
He knew this. So he undresses me, he gets me in this hot water, he takes my clothes to the dryer and dries them for me. And he's helping me, and then he leaves me. And at that point, I call my friend and I'm like, come get me. And he said, the cops are everywhere looking for you because your friend was turning you in. And I'm like, yeah, I got away though, come get me. So he comes to get me, and I'm really super paranoid though. I'm extremely paranoid. I'm dangerously paranoid.
Okay.
Again, I'm thinking suicide.
Okay.
But I'm also thinking my friend, who's used to me having their back, I can't leave them, so I'm probably going to have to kill him and then kill myself. And I said to him, this is what's going to go down. I'm fixing to kill you.
Wow.
And I'm going to kill myself because I don't know
what the trench coat, the friend that you're saying this to, or no?
No, this is another friend.
Okay, friend. So this is
your mind. Another friend, yes. So I have another friend that I'm running with.
Okay.
That's helping me with the drug deals.
Okay, yes.
So I'm like, here's the deal. I have to leave. again, this person is not mafia, but they're pretty well tied. They're very connected. I have to leave. I have to go to Tulsa in, because at that time I was in Siloam Springs, Arkansas. I said, I have to go to Tulsa and I have to detox before I end up doing something that we're all going to regret.
Okay.
So he said, okay, I'll help you get there. Because he believed me.
Mm-hmm. And you knew yourself.
I knew myself. This is not going to end well. So I get to the detox in Tulsa. And they let me in. I was pretty crazy. So they let me in. And then I, after a couple of days, I got my mind together. And I called the district attorney. And just said, you know, look, I prayed. God, give me courage to turn my life around. And that's all I said. And
I felt you were like, opening that door to the Lord at that point.
I was. Okay. And I think he gave me courage. I know he gave me courage.
Absolutely.
So with the courage he gave me, I picked up the phone. I called the district attorney's office. And I said, look, I want to see my children. And I want to have Christmas with my children. Mm-hmm. And don't arrest me in front of them, please. Mm-hmm. And I'm coming to turn myself in. Well, God gave me favor with the district attorney and the judge. They agreed. They would let me see my children, and they believed me that I would come turn myself in. Mm. So,
I mean, that just is, you know, it's a confession of our sins and the forgiveness there. I mean, just a little bit of a foreshadowing of how Christ just forgives when we confess, forgives it all. But it's just like that little bit of mercy they gave you because you finally confessed.
Yeah, I surrendered.
Uh-huh. Wow.
I'm done with this.
Wow.
I can't go in. I mean, I'm sure I could have gone lower, but I don't know how much lower.
So that
I
was your low point for sure, right
low.
Before that. And sometimes, often, that's what God has to bring us to our very lowest before we finally surrender. And then we can start relying on him for strength. And it sounds like that's what happened. So you confessed, surrendered.
Yes, and they let me see my children. Mm. So, and my kids' dad actually let me come over and see the kids. Mm. And so I had talked to my children, told them that I knew I was going to prison and that I was going to have Christmas with them that day, December the 7th. And 2000, I knew I was going to prison. I didn't know for how long or when I'd be back, but I was coming back, and I was coming back different. And my little girl, she was about 8, she looked at me and she just said, I can't even cry because I've cried so many times, Mom, please don't leave me. And you always left me, and you didn't come back like you promised. And so those were very hard words to hear from an 8-year-old little girl, because I knew by looking at her how bad I had wounded her. I had wounded my children, and I never had wanted to do that.
In the same way your mom had wounded you.
And my dad.
Yeah.
Because my dad did the first abandonment. And but I did what I said I was going to do. I went and turned myself in. I got a 10-year sentence. But the judge was merciful. He said to me, I'm going to give you 10 years in prison. But if you'll go into prison and do a 12-month drug program, I will let you out. And then I'm going to give you 10 years on paper. And if you mess up one time, I'm going to see to it that you get the maximum sentence that I can give you.
Wow.
So I got into prison, and I knew I only had one way, and that was God. And I went on a weekend. It was called Kairos Weekend. It was Kairos Prison Ministry. It was a 4-day discipleship weekend, and I got chosen to go.
So this is out of, like, so you got chosen while
inside
you're in prison.
Okay. It's a prison ministry.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So on this weekend, I just encountered the love of God, that he wasn't mad at me. He didn't hate me. He loved me. Mm-hmm. And no matter what I had been through, he had always been there. I just didn't recognize it. And so I really rededicated my life to the Lord. And I haven't turned away from him again. Oh. It's too painful to do that. But through that, I met a lady named Eileen Guidry, she was part of the volunteers that came in with that weekend. Mm. And God put us together, and he made us friends. And so she would write me while I was in prison, and I would write her. And Her and her friends would all pray for me. And so now I came to the fork in the road. It's time to get out of prison. Where am I going?
So how many years had you been in there?
19 months.
Oh, just 19 months. Mm-hmm. I know we gave you mercy, but you went through that 12-month thing and mm-hmm. you stayed clean mm-hmm. and did what you were supposed to.
I did what I was supposed to do.
Wow, so 19 months. And mm-hmm. during that time in prison, I mean, you hear the Lord working on you. And I'm sure that you just, I know that God wanted that to be part of your story, because now, foreshadowed to the, or in the future, right now, that is such a part of your story with what mm-hmm. God brought you to. So during that time in prison, were your eyes open to other women and their stories and struggles?
Yes.
And
yeah. Yes. So during that time in prison, I mean, it was more of a learning experience. It was a time for me to set aside and grow mm-hmm. and realize where I didn't want to spend my future. But I encountered death row face to face. That's a whole new experience when you're in prison and females on your prison yard are being carried away to be executed. Mm. Very sad, very traumatic, almost inhumane. Mm-hmm. It's like the sheep being led to the slaughter.
Yeah.
When that woman is walking across the yard and you know that she's not coming back because they're fixing to put her to death. Twice that happened. That was very traumatizing, very sad.
That's, we don't think that, I mean, mm-hmm. from the outside, we think, oh, we just need, that's justice. But yeah, you're mm-hmm. giving us such a different perspective being in there and seeing that and knowing those women.
Yes, and I still battle with it because, you know, I battle with the death penalty, whether it's right or wrong. But I experienced it firsthand in that sense, and it was extremely painful watching that happen. How courageous those women were, mm. you know, but that's another story. I encountered women who impacted my life so much that when I got out of prison, after getting my children back, I decided I needed to go get them.
Wow.
And so then God made me a prison volunteer.
Okay, so going back real quick, so you're the 19 months, it's time for you to get out. Did you know at that time that you wanted to be a prison volunteer, or no? You?
Well, at that time, I did not think I wanted to be a prison volunteer.
You thought, I don't want to go back ever.
I don't ever want to go
sure
back
you
to
did. It was a little
again.
Raw feelings at that point. Okay.
I hate everything about prison. I hate the food. I hate the okay. attitudes. I hate okay. everything about prison. No, I'm only going to get out and go get my children. But
okay.
I was planning on going back to the Tahlequah, Sellersaw area where my children were and get them. And my friend said to me, weigh the choices here. If you go back to where you came from, everybody you know uses drugs. Mm. How do you think you're going to stay clean this time and make it? But if you take a different path, and what if God brings your children to you?
Mm.
And so I was at a crossroad where I needed to trust her.
And trust God, really.
Uh-huh.
I mean, is he going to do, come through?
Is this? He going to,
yeah.
Yes. And at that time, I really didn't trust God.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I know things have happened in my life, but I thought those were coincidences.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't have a trust relationship with God.
Yeah.
And so that's what I learned through her was... trust me that I'm leading you to where God, where you can trust God.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said, you know, come to Tulsa, go to a transition home. And I believe that God will bring your children to you if you're obedient to God.
Mm, wow.
I was so afraid to trust her. And I was so afraid to lie to my children because I had told them I was coming back. And so many times I promised I was coming back and I never did. And now I was doing it again. But I stepped out in faith, believing that if I was obedient, that God would bless my efforts.
Mm.
And he did. He ended up bringing my children to me.
Wow.
I got involved in this ministry called Stand in the Gap Ministry.
Okay.
And they started mentoring me, teaching me how to be a sober mother to my children.
Mm.
And how to get my children back. And
Stand in the Gap is a big part of your story. And that's a ministry. Is it based in Tulsa?
It's based
right?
in Tulsa.
And they work with women just like you, coming out of prison to get mm-hmm. their life kind of back in order, be a good mother, all of those things, right?
Yes.
So how did you get connected with them? Just
Because Eileen was also, she was my mentor in prison, but she was also a mentor with the Stand in the Gap ministry.
Okay.
And she would write me letters and say, I really want you to consider and pray about Stand in the Gap. And I said, well, that's a great idea, but I'm not going in that direction.
Okay.
So no, thank you.
So why was your mind closed to that? You just figured you could do it on your own, do you think? Or?
Well, I was going back to Tahlequah. I was going back to my children.
You still thought, I'm
going
to go back to my children. You hadn't yet thought, like, no, they're coming to me. You were still not stepping out there. Okay, gotcha.
So when she was telling me about it.
Gotcha.
But then whenever I decided to go her way, she said to me, well, I want you to go and meet the people at Stand in the Gap. And let's see if you qualify for Stand in the Gap family.
Okay.
But I already knew I didn't.
Okay.
And
why did you feel like you did? Why didn't you?
I just didn't think I did.
Okay,
I just
you felt like you didn't know. Okay,
no, I just felt like I didn't.
Okay.
I thought, oh, if you're going to qualify me, well, you're going to see really fast that I'm not qualified for this.
Okay, that was your belief.
My perception.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so they were saying, well, is Jesus active in your life? Yes, he's active. But I still didn't think I qualified for anything.
Okay.
So I was surprised when they said, yes, you do qualify for Stand in the Gap. We want to help you. And so it really changed me a lot.
Mm.
Because I had so much junk in my life and false beliefs.
And you had never gone through therapy or counseling.
No.
I mean,
no.
Oh, goodness, yeah.
And false beliefs ruled my life.
Mm-hmm.
And because you hear my life. My life is full of false beliefs.
Yeah.
And so I get into Stand in the Gap, and God wants to teach me through them truth. First of all, I had 8 couples that committed to walk with me for 24 months.
Wow.
Yes. And the beauty in that is I thought all of these men were adulterers, and they were all child molesters. Because that was my truth in life, that all men are adulterers, and they all sexually abuse children, teenagers, women, everything.
Those were the men you had encountered, so that's what you knew.
Okay. And that was my truth.
Okay.
So it was, I learned that there were men that really loved Jesus, and that really loved their wives, and really loved their children.
So that's why, I mean, I was just doing some research on Stand in the Gap, and that's why they really do want the men involved, because mm-hmm. so many women that have gone your similar journey, that's what they believe about men, that they're mm-hmm. just all bad, and it's really good for them to see a healthy mm-hmm. man that doesn't want that. And when you say you had 8 families walking beside you, share a little bit, like, what did that mean? What did that entail?
Well, we met every 2 weeks, and I had goals.
Okay.
And they helped me set goals, because I have a joke about women coming out of prison. We want our driver's license. We want a good job. We want our children. We want health insurance. We want benefits. We want the husband with the white picket fence. And we want it all in 7 days.
Right, which is totally possible. Yeah.
Yes. No. We want to make up for everything that we lost in the first week. So what they did was help me pace my goals and make them reasonable.
Okay.
And pray with me about everything, and God miraculously answered so many prayers. In fact, one of our prayers, so the Stand in the Gap family, this does not happen normally, and it hasn't happened but one other time since then. But the Stand in the Gap family on the team ended up taking my children and keeping my children until I was able to be ready for them. So I've graduated the transition home. I've lived on my own for a year in an apartment complex.
And you don't have your children.
I don't have my children yet.
Does your husband have them?
Stand in the Gap has my children.
Stand in the Gap has them now. Okay.
They have my kids. And so, but we're meeting weekly and we're doing family stuff. But my children are very angry with me. They are very hurt by me, and they really don't want anything to do with me.
Yeah.
So we're taking it really slow about meeting together and setting goals. So now I'm at a bridge where it's about time for me to get them back to come live with me.
Okay.
And they're going to Union Schools in Tulsa. and I work at 11th and Sheridan for StressCon. It's a construction engineering company.
Okay.
And we're going to pray that the Lord will meet us halfway in the middle for a place to get my kids back.
Okay.
And one of the significant things we prayed for was a maple tree in the front yard. And so I end up, the Lord gives us a duplex halfway between 11th and Sheridan and 61st and Mingo with Union or Memorial, whatever it is over there. And we get a duplex, and sure enough, there's a maple tree in the front yard. But it was silver. Well, I didn't even know God made silver maple trees.
He's showing off for you.
but it was the wrong color.
Oh, okay.
And so I secretly told the Lord, because I never had asked for a specific color.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, Lord, thank you for this maple tree, but it's the wrong color. I wanted red or orange.
Okay.
I didn't even know they made silver, Lord, but thank you. So the funny thing with that is, would stand in the gap. They were they offered very strict rules, like no relationships. You're not getting another boyfriend for a while.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a hard thing, but I agree through that. So 4 years out of prison, I meet this guy, and he actually lives in Claremore, Oklahoma. And in that time, I got my children back. We're living in the duplex. We've got the maple tree in the front yard. It's the wrong color, but nevertheless. But my daughter's running away from home. And
so how old were your kids at this time?
At that time, my daughter was going on 15.
Okay.
I know that she's run away and that she's living in Claremore.
Okay.
So I go to this guy that's attending my church at Asbury and say, hey, do you think your youth group could go out and to this trailer park? I know my daughter's there, and could y'all maybe do a little youth work and meet her? He's like, well, I'll see if we can do that, and I'll start praying for your daughter.
Okay.
But he says today, I didn't know whenever I was going to start praying for your daughter that she was going to end up being my daughter.
Aww.
So it was really really cool how God joined our hearts. But the funniest thing about that is when I met him and went to his house, there was a red maple in the front yard. And when we talked about the red maple, he had planted it. And one night, it was a rainy night, and he was just having a bad day, and he decided to go to Atwoods and get a tree to plant in the front yard because he had had a tree there and it died. He went to Atwoods. There was two trees on the shelf. He grabbed one, and it just happened to be a red maple. It was about the time that I was praying for this maple tree in the front yard.
Wow.
And so the moral of that story is sometimes God is going to answer your prayer, but you're not going to see that it's the right color or the right way for maybe 4 years down the road.
Yeah, that's very good.
And so we ended up getting married.
You married him?
Yes,
I married him. Oh, gosh, I didn't know that part of the story.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
So I ended up marrying this guy. We have a beautiful
wedding. Are you going to write a book?
And
this is like, wow. Okay, so you married this, and he was the youth guy from Asbury that you had called to, or you would say, can you check in on my daughter?
Well, he was a man that attended our church that lived in Claremore.
Okay.
And so that's how God brought us together.
Gotcha. Okay, wow.
And then we ended up dating, and his friends warned him, do you sure you want to marry this girl with all of this baggage and all of this stuff? And he's like, I'm sure.
And he was a good guy.
And he was a great guy.
Yeah.
He'd never done drugs. He, drank when he was a teenager, but he hasn't drank in 50 years.
Wow.
And he ended up being the best thing that ever could have happened to me and my children.
I can't get my smile off my face.
That's
such an awesome.
Yes. And then one day when we're married and we're talking, and he says, I want to make a dream come true for you. And I'm like, well, I have my kids back. I have my dream come true. And he's like, no, I want to do something different. And he said, tell me a dream that you had growing up. And I said, well, I didn't really dream, because addicts survive. They don't dream.
Mm.
And he said, well, then we're gonna figure out a dream together. And so he said, so that's your job right now. You're going to figure out what dream you want.
Mm.
And so one day I went to him and I said, okay, I figured out what my dream is. He said, my dream is to help other children in Oklahoma like someone helped mine.
Mm. Okay.
My children were headed down a destructive path because of brokenness. And they got saved. And I wanted to give the same opportunity for children in Oklahoma. So he said, how are you going to do that? we got to break it down in steps. And so I said, well, we're going to start a house. And he said, okay, well, then let's go find us a little house. And so we found a small house and we bought it. We went to the bank, we got a loan, and we bought the house. And we started with his house, Outreach Ministries. Okay. And we started putting women in our home. It would only hold four women.
Okay.
And that was kind of crowded, but four women with the goal of we will help women get their life back on track so they can get their kids back.
So even though your dream was helping the children, you knew you had to start with the women.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Because my motto today is, if I can save a mom, I can save a child. And I really do what I do for children. But the journey I've chosen is saving their mothers.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah, that is such truth. I mean, we fostered for a few years, and that is what I saw too. Like, here's the brokenness, because where is the help for these moms? They're not going to get there. We can help these kids all we want, but if we don't help the moms, they're not getting their kids back. So yes. God totally put that on your heart, that is where your attention needed to be for these moms.
Mm-hmm. He did. Wow. And so we started this about 11 years ago. We started the houses. Mm-hmm. And now we're to our 13th house.
Oh my goodness.
And we house women. And now we house women and children. Some of our homes are designated for women and children. And
so you started with one house, one little dream,
one
house that you had about four women in and their children. Now, were these women coming out of prison or not necessarily?
Some were coming out of jail and some were coming out of prison.
Okay.
And still today, we take women out of rehab, out of prison, and out of jail.
Okay.
Because I'm trying to keep them out of prison.
Yeah.
And so we take multiple populations, but all of our women are 95% of our women are mothers, and they're mothers who've lost their children.
Okay.
And I'm on a mission. I'm going to help you get your life different. I'm going to be Mike Deese to you.
Yeah.
I'm going to help you. I'm going to coach you in everything I know so that you can live a productive life and get your children back.
Yeah. So that Mike that planted those seeds in you years ago, it's like he is now, his truth, his wisdom is now coming through, and you're being used by God for that. So you have 11. How many houses did you say?
13.
13 houses. Mm-hmm. I mean, did you even think when God had that little dream that one house that it would flourish to that?
No.
No.
I didn't see it being that big, and I still don't feel like it's big. It doesn't feel like enough. Because the need is so great.
There's such a need. Talk a little bit about that. Just the need. I mean,
the need is so great. We have 30,000 children in Oklahoma with an incarcerated mom.
30,000.
We incarcerate more women in Oklahoma than anywhere in the entire world. And it's not because our women are the worst in the world. It's just the way our laws are written that we incarcerate at such a high rate. So we have so many broken children in our communities.
Because when these women are incarcerated and then they leave, what happens to them? I mean, what if they don't get connected with you or stand in the gap, then what generally happens? They're thrown out to try to survive?
Yes, they're thrown out, and they mostly return to the old lifestyle that they
have. What is the percentage? Do you know the percentage of that?
7 out of 10 people return to prison.
Wow.
If they don't have support.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Oklahoma, it's a big problem.
It's a big problem in Oklahoma.
Okay.
And so so I started that 11 years ago, building with the houses and the children in Rogers County. And then, 6 years ago at the time, too, we're evolving into a more felon-friendly state.
Okay.
But even 6 to 10 years ago, we weren't there.
Okay. And I know what you mean by that, but what do you mean by that? Just so we're not on the...
I mean that it was hard for women with a felony conviction on their record to get employment.
Okay. Right.
It was easier to say no to them as to hire them.
Okay. But now because we're becoming more, quote, felon-friendly, it's not as hard? Is that
right.
What you're saying?
Right. We're more and more companies are understanding that often felon people make good employees.
Yeah.
Because they're grateful to have a job.
Right.
They're grateful for a second chance. Not always, but a lot of the times.
Right.
That is the case. And so, but 6 years ago, I had an idea that I was going to start a business. Mm-hmm. So then I went to my husband and said, basically, I have another dream. And he said, every time, honey, your dreams cost a lot of money.
I gave you one. That was it. One dream.
Honey, please stop. They're expensive. And I said, no, this one's gonna be all right. This is not going to cost you a lot of money. And so, in fact, I said, I'm going to start a business. I'm going to start a coffee shop. And he said, you're not a businesswoman. Don't do it. And I said, well, submission is not my greatest strength. I'm going to go ahead and do it.
Okay.
And so I rented my neighbor and I, we rented a flea market booth. We came up with the name She Brews after Hebrews. Yes. We named it She Brews and decided that we would start with a coffee shop because I thought I will hire women out of prison and I will let my community get to know them like I know them, and they're going to love them. And then we're going to bring women and children to this community, and we're going to change the lives of children because Claremore, Oklahoma is a great community. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, we brought about 163 children to Claremore.
Really, Rhonda? Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
Now, a lot of them haven't, their moms have gotten them, and they've come and lived in Claremore for a while and moved to other places. But we've been able to put 163 children back with their moms.
Wow.
And we've helped a lot of mothers.
Yes, you have. And She Brews employs these women. Is that right?
She Brews employs the women. Yeah. It's the coffee house. And so we grew from the flea market booth to a storefront.
Wow, and you have two, correct?
And now we have two She Brews, yes.
Oh, my goodness. And so the women, you're providing the housing, the job, but it's not easy street for them at all. It's you have some pretty, I'm assuming, some pretty strict rules, and you want to help them, not hurt them by disabling what they can't and providing too much. So talk a little bit about that, like what you do provide and what you... some of the things that they need, they have to do.
Okay, so we give them safe employment, and we give them a safe housing.
Okay.
In good neighborhoods, a safe home. And they, in turn, they do have to work. They have to work a minimum of 32 hours a week.
Okay, and is that at She Brews?
Well, at She Brews or in the community.
Okay.
Because now, after being in the community for 6 years with the employment or with the houses, a lot of the places in Claremore hire our women.
Okay, good.
And they have to be really good workers. They cannot quit without a 2-week notice. And they pay rent, they pay fines, they pay child support, they pay anything that's due. They work on getting their driver's license back. One of our main focuses is that they grow in their relationship with Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. So they have to have daily Bible reading, daily journaling. And we do monitor the journaling. Mm-hmm. Not that I want to read their journals, but I want to glance at it to make sure that they're doing that, because that's how I gauge their Bible reading.
Okay.
They're to journal on scriptures. How is the Lord speaking to me today, and what does He want me to do with it?
Okay.
And they participate in Celebrate Recovery.
Oh, they do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then also the 12 steps of Celebrate Recovery, and they do...
Do you do that program on your own there then? Like, is there... Or do you have? Are they involved in a church that does
They're
that?
In, my husband and I are Celebrate Recovery ministry leaders, right. And we've been in Celebrate Recovery since I walked out of prison. Mm-hmm. That was part of my Stand in the Gaps program that they mandated to me that I would get involved in Celebrate Recovery.
Okay, so you know the healing power of that.
Yes.
So that's why you want these women in that.
I do.
Okay.
And I want them to heal.
And that's what I was so curious. Like, you can't just, I mean, you can give them a job, you can give them their life, but unless they have Christ as a center and true healing, they're... it's not going to stick. Celebrate Recovery is a big part of that then for these
it
women.
It is.
Okay.
And then once they go through the 12 steps, then again, we ask them to lead the 12 step. We ask them to sponsor.
Wow. Awesome.
Because we measure success in Claremore by the way the women give back.
I love that.
You can take, but what are you giving? That's really how we measure our success. How are you giving back once you've been given a gift?
That's really good.
So we in turn have them also, they participate as a neighbor, a client, and Stand in the Gap. And then they turn around, and then their next team, a year later, they lead the Stand in the Gap.
Okay, so you're still working with Stand in the Gap, mm-hmm. because you also play a role now with Stand in the Gap. Is that correct?
Yes, so Stand in the Gap is my job.
Okay.
And so for them, I teach a program called...
So now you work for Standard Gap.
I do. I work for Standard Gap.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I teach a reentry program in the prisons. So now I've been in the prisons also as a volunteer or Stand in the Gap employee for about the last 13 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
And helping women again on the same journey that God
has
placed me on.
I just can't get over, time and time again, I mean, your story and other women, how God uses these hard, hard stories and hard places, but uses them really to give Him the glory and then to help other women. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing. And your story could have gone one or two ways, but I mean, you surrendered to the Lord and now He is using it in amazing, amazing ways.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know... You know, you said 7 out of 10 women come out of prison and they end up back in there. As far as women that go through your program and your houses, do you know the difference?
We have about 7 out of 10 make it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. We have a really good success rate.
Oh, wow. Wrong.
But we're giving them a full package. Housing, employment, Stand in the Gap mentors, a community that's safe and that loves them. Our mayor loves us.
Oh.
His wife loves us. Our whole community loves our women. You know, they've got a church that loves them. They've got multiple churches that love them. And we set them up for a win-win situation.
And what, I mean, that in itself is a testimony, because if you look at our country, we don't like prisoners. We don't want to deal, you know, we don't want to deal with that there. But you're saying your little town has embraced, have embraced them and sees God in them and sees that they can be these honorable women of our society. I mean, that is, did you ever imagine when you started with that little dream that that is what would happen?
No.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
I mean, it's such an example of God and just your story and dreaming a little bit and God just coming through big.
Mm-hmm.
So Rhonda, if people do want to get involved to help, what are some ways that you suggest that we could do that? If other women are hearing this and like, you know what, I haven't walked in those shoes, but I'd like to help, or I have walked in those shoes and I'd like to help. What are some ways to help and get involved?
So mentoring is always needed. We always need the mentors, and we train and we use the Stand in the Gap model, which is a team mentoring model.
Okay.
And
what are some expectations of the mentors as far as time commitment? You say there's a training and then...
So there's a 2-hour training before we put you with a woman, and then it's a 3-hour commitment a month that you meet face to face for 3 hours a month.
Okay.
And then on the times that you're not meeting, maybe it's shoot a text message. Hey, how's your day going? Oh, I read the script. Sure. Okay. I listened to this podcast. Why don't you listen to it? Mm-hmm. Those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Just mentoring them. Maybe I've got to run to the mall. It's Christmas. I'm going to be shopping. You want to go with me?
Just have a relationship with them.
Yeah. Yes. It's about building a relationship. You know, good quality clothes.
Okay.
Not clothes with stains. You know,
Want donations?
Yes.
Of? Okay.
Donations. Because these women come out of a prison with... every book and every letter they've ever read in prison, but that's about it.
Yeah.
So they're starting from scratch.
Okay.
And, you know, we do get donations, but sometimes we get donations of things that we don't want to wear anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want to say is if you want to donate clothes, donate something you would wear today.
Mm-hmm. Don't sew it something you're in the back of your closet that nobody would wear.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you prefer do you guys have a drop off for donations or?
We do. Or they can drop at the coffee shop.
They can. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's good to know.
And that address is 414 West Will Rogers Boulevard.
Okay. And we'll put all that on the website in the show notes that people know.
Yes.
And again, clean things that you would wear, and donations for children's clothes or just the women's?
I don't know. We could take some children's clothes too.
Okay.
You know, again, good quality, not stained up, not holes, things that their children would wear today.
Okay.
And we need seasonal.
Okay.
Because we don't need summer right now.
You're right. Right.
We need fall and winter.
Right.
And so that's some of the things that we run into.
Okay.
And then, of course, we are a 501c3, but the coffee shop and the houses, so we can always use money.
That's what I was going to say. You are relying on the faithfulness of people to help support you, like answering the call of God that tells us to help.
It cost a lot of money to rent 13 houses.
Yes.
It's hard work. Yeah. And I'm not a paid employee. I'm a volunteer in the coffee shop and the houses. I'm not doing this to get rich.
Yeah.
I'm doing this to change lives.
Yeah.
That's my payment. And, you know, staying in the gap pays me. I work for them to teach in the prison. But as far as the houses and the coffee shop, they are a nonprofit and they always need donations.
Yeah, and that's where, I mean, really, I feel like as Christians, that's when we're called to study. It's great to hear these stories and to, oh, look what she's doing, but we can do more too as Christians. Maybe you don't want to get your hands dirty right now, but we can give. And that's what God calls us to be, giving back to help these, the widows and the orphans and the needy. So,
and that's hard because I'm literally in the process of closing one of my houses because of lack of funds.
You are.
And it has 8 beds, and that's really hard because I'm having to turn people away. Mm. But when the oil market crashed in the last couple of years, the donations have went down so much that I can't maintain.
Right.
I've got to start cutting back.
Right.
And the hardest thing for me to say is, no, I don't have a bed. I can't help you.
Because you have women, I'm sure, you have more of a need than you have available.
Yes, because they want to go somewhere safe.
How many women do you have right now that are being housed?
Right now we have around 27 women.
Okay.
And
is that about full capacity then?
Oh yeah, we're at full capacity.
You are. Okay.
I do have one on a hide a bed couch.
Okay.
And I've got moms in prison and rehab that want to come to me.
Okay.
And I want to help them because I know I can. And I've been saying yes when I know I don't have a space, because I'm thinking, I'll put you on the floor, I'll put you on the couch until I figure out what to do with you. Because when I hear the stories of their children, and I know I can help. And the Lord has given me tremendous favor with the Department of Human Services and with judges. I have tremendous favor there that the Lord has given.
Wow.
And I can make it happen.
I can't thank you enough, really, for just coming on and sharing the honesty of your story. I'm sure it's still hard to relive some of those years, but goodness, just giving God the glory. I mean, it's probably why, I know it's why you do what you do, and to have other women have their stories and like yours do. So thank you, Rhonda, for coming on today.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Oh my gosh, yes. Didn't I tell you that Rhonda's story would leave you amazed at Christ's healing power and grace? Pretty sure I said wow about 25 times in that conversation. I hope her story has left you encouraged and motivated to take a closer look at your own story and examine how God wants to use you in the story of others. As Rhonda mentioned, Stand in the Gap and His House Ministries need volunteers and donors. Women like Rhonda can't do the Lord's work alone. If you're feeling called to get more involved by becoming a mentor or donating, contact info can be found at the Her Story Speaks website at www.herstoryspeaks.com. On the website, you'll also find more information about the Stand in the Gap ministry, She Brews Coffee House in Claremore, and His House Ministries. Also, if you're liking the show, please subscribe and share it with a friend. Stories have so much power when we share them with others. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.